Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Welcome to the Edge of Sports podcast, only brought to you by The Nation Magazine. I'm Dave Zirin, joined here today by Arya Shirazi, where we are going to talk in our current basketball series, originally called Basketball Butterfly Effect, but we're moving way beyond that to trying to take an expansive, different kind of look at basketball. Today, we are going to speak about something that we both feel strongly on, and that's how we chose this topic. We're going to talk about a backcourt in today's NBA, the likes of which we have, I think, never seen. It's the backcourt for the Dallas Mavericks. It's Luka Doncic. It's Kyrie Irving. And they are making magic on a nightly basis. Luka Doncic, for those who don't know, is averaging 34 points, 9 rebounds, and 10 assists a game. It's just an absurdity. Kyrie Irving is an efficient 26 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists guy, and he is the leading NBA scorer in the fourth quarter by a lot. Dallas is tied for the second best record in the entire NBA since the All-Star break, trailing just Boston and tied with Denver. So those are the two championship favorites, and they are tied with Denver for the best record. And it's not a fluke. It's not a fluke at all, because Kyrie had some injuries in the first half of the season, and when these two guys play together, they are one of the top teams in the NBA. So I think they're going to do some serious damage in the playoffs. Now, this team has been helped by some midseason trades. I don't want to even go into that too deeply, because if you watch, it's Kyrie and Luka. It's Luka, it's Kyrie. Like a young Doug Henwood. Not Doug Henwood. Doug Henning. Doug Henwood is a political writer. Sorry, Doug Henwood. I know you listen to the show. Doug Henning. They are making magic every night. There you go. So today we're going to discuss this magical duo. And here are just some topics we're going to hit upon. And I'm going to throw it to Arya Shirazi. These are the key topics of why we want to talk about this, at least from my perspective. Last year, when Dallas, raided the store, its players, its draft picks, to trade for Kyrie Irving, you could not find someone who liked this move among the basketball cognoscenti. They all hated it. The smartest minds said it would crash and burn. Well, it didn't. And a lot of these talking heads on TV, the NBA podcasting community, they're not really good on assessment. So why did they think it was going to crash and burn? What can we learn from this mainstream media mistake? And also, how far do we really think this team can go come playoff time? And now I give you all Arya Shirazi. Arya, from your perspective, what's going on here? Why are we even talking about Luka and Kyrie?
Well, it's gratifying that you were inspired to devote a show to Dallas's backcourt, not because of any kind of implosion or because of an ignominious exit or ending, but as you said, because of how well they're playing. And how their on-court performance has really propelled Dallas, particularly in the second half since the All-Star break, into a team that is playing as well as any team in the league, and certainly just about better than almost every other team heading into the postseason in the West. You are much more closely connected to the media and the sports media, and really what's being said and what the popular opinions are and the not popular opinions. When Kyrie was acquired by Dallas last year, I'm sure that it was a move that was panned in many areas, many quarters. But I also remember a good deal of it being an intriguing move, a fascinating move, because the pairing of those two talents was undeniable. So I think that if anything, there was a fascination in kind of that car wreck kind of sense about what might be likely to happen. But again, I don't think that it was across the board, wow, this is what is Dallas doing? Because on court, it was a steal. They gave up, I think, a couple of serviceable rotation players. Spencer Dinwiddie, Dorian Finney-Smith are the two that I remember. They might have been one other in there sent from Dallas. But this was not a fair exchange, both in terms of production and fame as players. So, and the way in which that first year played out, I think certainly followed the script that many in the media and onlookers and those paid to talk about this were thinking it might go, or even hoping it might go, because of course it makes for plenty of good copy. But and as you had said, Irving's in and out of the lineup-ness in the first half of the season didn't really allow that backcourt to click on a nightly basis the way that it immediately started to once they were playing together every game. But also Dallas's performance had kind of in the first half was continuing the uninspired play that had gone on for the past two seasons. So I'll let you frame a little bit more, but the players, primarily Kyrie's history and the franchise's recent history, all play a lot into what made this possibly combustible and right now kind of unstoppable.
Yeah, last year it was interesting because Kyrie Irving is one of the great offensive wizards, frankly, according to other NBA players, that's the that they have seen that's in the league. I mean, the respect he gets from other NBA players, it used to boggle my mind. Now it does not. And the read on Kyrie was that he was a team killer, that he had a good thing going with LeBron in Cleveland, dumped that. Went to an incredible scene in Celtics where he with the Celtics where he would be the main guy at the wheel for a team with a young Jason Tatum, a young Jaylen Brown, a young Robert Williams, and the Time Lord. And that ended terribly. Then he goes to the Nets, which is, you know, really an all-time disaster, largely due to injuries, but Kyrie was at the heart of several controversies that made national news, both his unwillingness to take the vaccine, as well as his various comments that I always thought were tongue-in-cheek about the world being flat, and then his posting a video about the history of the Black Israelites and what people came down on him for, rightly, for some anti-Semitic tropes that are in the video, but it's not even clear that he saw the video. And the amount, I will always maintain that the amount of shit he got for an internet post was kind of absurdist and ridiculous. And here he is with this damage on his reputation, to the point of which where the sports media were saying in a uniform way, wow, sending him to Dallas for two role players who seem to fit very well with Luka in Finney Smith and Dinwiddie was a step backwards. And I agree with what you're saying. It's amazing to look back on that and think that they thought a step backwards was going from Dorian Finney-Smith and Spencer Dinwiddie for Kyrie Irving. You know, that this was viewed with such contempt. But also viewed with such contempt at that time, there was some hatred growing around Luka for the team not making the playoffs. There was this, no one really wants to play with Luka because he's so ball dominant. You know, is this really a recipe for winning? You know, like all the chatterboxes were chattering in a big way. And nobody was taking a step back and saying, when you put talent that incredible together, as long as Kyrie can stay healthy, maybe they can figure it out. And the logic that said, well, these are two ball dominant players, they can't play together. It's like, well, Kyrie Irving played very well with a guy named LeBron James and a guy named Spencer, and a guy named James Harden when they were healthy. The record was solid. And with Durant, like, it was almost transcendent. They played together so little, we forget that. Kyrie's ability to play with any type of teammate is amazing. And I think that a lot of the mainstream media was driven by dislike of Kyrie the person, which I will maintain is a very unfair judgment of his character, but dislike of Kyrie as a person, which then put them in a position of wrongly judging how these two talents would actually jibe together. And it's one of those examples of politics trumping logic. The same way I think sometimes you hear people, not sometimes, all the time you hear people say, oh, Colin Kaepernick wasn't really blackballed because he took a knee during the anthem. He was blackballed because he's just a shitty quarterback. You know, that was always bullshit. And this was always, has to be seen now as unadulterated bullshit. And they should say so. They should say, wow, two Hall of Fame quality players in the same backcourt who clearly love the game as much as these two guys love the game can figure out how to make it work. And my goodness, they certainly have.
A lot to talk about there, Dave.
Yes.
The reason Kyrie Irving's love of the game might have been questioned was because of his willingness to miss games for a fairly widely acknowledged misguided reason that wasn't supported with any logic behind it. So it's great to say, well, that, you know, at the end of the day, this guy just loves the game. But this guy was one of the highest paid players in the league who, by his own actions, could not play home games in Brooklyn. So if anybody is questioning this guy's ultimate love of the game, there is evidence to support that skepticism. You had mentioned the respect that fellow NBA players and fellow NBA all-stars have for Irving's game. And I think that speaks for itself. When the best players in the world are on the floor with Kyrie, they think to themselves, man, this guy's amazing. He is unguardable. And when you watch him, that is the impression that you get. You can't not get that watching Kyrie Irving for either a three-game stretch or a three-possession stretch depending on the game, that becomes instantly apparent that he can do things on the floor on offense that the other incredible players on the floor with him cannot do. So that is Kyrie, and that's pretty much who he has always been. A one-of-a-kind player and a one-of-a-kind personality as an NBA player. And you did a good job of summing it up. I certainly don't need to itemize, but nobody forces Kyrie Irving to share his views. And I am absolutely in favor of anybody, whether they're a public figure or not, sharing their views. I am, you know, the opposite of a shut up and play guy. And in that regard, the sports world has certainly made advances in the voices that athletes have, and using that platform mostly to say the right things and bring awareness to the right things. And I think that you've played actually an important role in the advancement in the sports world, to your credit. But the flip side of that is that when you put yourself out there, you're putting yourself out there, and that represents you. So Kyrie is not a misunderstood figure, or I mean, he might be a misunderstood inner soul, but he provides and has provided all of the material for people to support him or to oppose him or to ridicule him or to attack him or whatever. You don't have to dig far. He has put it out there. This is not a phrase that I like to bandy about, but Kyrie Irving is controversial. Courts controversy and I think loves controversy, but is also a little bit lazy about it. So he'll put stuff out there, and then when there's a reaction, he's like, oh, that's a thing. That's a thing. I don't want to. All right. Yeah. I've moved on. I was interested in that morning. It seems to me that that's kind of a Kyrie philosophy in a way. And Irving, for all of what I consider some public blunders, occasionally seems enlightened, is occasionally on the right side of issues, and at certain times has been the only athlete saying the right things about things that I consider important in the world. So there's the whole spectrum, but Kyrie is the one who says, this is me and this is what I'm about. And you had also mentioned his previous stops. Irving's history is one of mostly always playing with at least one superstar and sometimes a super duper star. And that in this, the Mavericks, this is his fourth team. And in the previous three, there's all been acrimonious partings. Irving was more than a crucial piece of Cleveland's only championship. I mean, the second of the three-headed all-star combo that they had. Or all-star trio, I guess it would be. And of course, famously hits the shot that brings Cleveland the championship. And then within the next year, for some reason, is unhappy about playing with LeBron or unhappy with the pecking order or whatever it is, and moves to the Celtics in what turns out to be a steal for the Celtics. And again, this is so much time has passed now and other headlines have replaced those that I think that it's easy to forget now how incredible Kyrie was that first year in Boston.
True.
He was largely healthy and the Celtics looked great.
And he was dropping 25 plus a game.
On a winner. So that was kind of the most validated, I think, Kyrie has had. I want to be, you know, I've proved that I can be the second best player on a championship team. I want to be the best player on a team playing for a championship. And that first year in Boston, he looked like he was exactly that. And as you said, they had a rookie in second year, Jalen Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Looked incredible what that team was going to be capable of. And the vibes were so groovy that he goes into his second year in Boston, about to sign a max extension. Pen is about to be put to paper. And then it's not, but it's going to be. And it's not, and it's, but it's going to be. And then midway through the year, Irving suffers injuries that second year. So he's not as present, doesn't play as many games. And there's questions about his chemistry with the team and his leadership or lack of leadership. And as the season goes on and his standing in Boston, not only among the Celtics community, but within the locker room, seems to be fading. That leads to him signing the max, not with the Celtics, but with Brooklyn.
Yeah. Couple of things. The first is we shouldn't. I think there are a couple things real quick, and then I want a little play and then a little personal. On the play tip, he's so good that despite how things ended in Cleveland, LeBron wanted him in L.A. badly to be with the Lakers, and D'Lo was seen very much as the second choice for them trying to retool their backcourt. And there is a pretty firm belief in the NBA that has been leaked by credible sources that Brooklyn wasn't going to trade him to the Lakers because that's where Kyrie wanted to go, and traded him to Dallas almost as a spite move. And that makes sense, and because that was out there in the ether as possibly true, it was another reason why people said, well, he's going to go to Dallas and he's going to sulk because he's not where he wants to be. It's not the media market where he wants to be, even though Dallas is a huge media market. And playing with Luka means not having the ball in his hands. These are two ball dominant players. Who's going to be bringing the ball up? Who's going to be doing this? Who's going to be doing that? And so I think the way that those two have been able to make it work is one of the coolest basketball stories of the year, to see two very much ball dominant people playing off each other and using their incredible skill set to play off each other is just so cool to watch. Kyrie Irving is for me like the first half of the Poochie episode of The Simpsons. I was thinking about this while you were talking, because when I watch Dallas games, even if Luka has the ball, my eyes are straying to see where Kyrie is on the court, where he's positioning himself, whether he's stationing himself in the corner, whether he's coming up for maybe a little quick slip off a screen. Like, I'm always looking for where he is. And it made me think of Poochie, because the line where when he's not on screen, everybody needs to be asking, hey, where's Poochie? That's how I feel about Kyrie. It's like, if I'm not seeing Kyrie right away, I'm like, hey, where's Kyrie? That's how cool I find his general demeanor at this point in his career. And I guess what I'm taking from what you're saying and what I'll accept is that, yeah, Kyrie certainly earned the reputation for people to think that Dallas would be a disaster. And it is really to his credit that he has, you know, there's no other way to put it, he's grown up and he's handling himself, you know, like a pro. And he's still, you know, Kyrie, you know, bless him, he takes a keffiyeh to every single game to show his solidarity with the Palestinian people. He wears it sometimes on his head, which is always an interesting look. When he does his interviews afterwards, you know, the media like assiduously does not ask him about it, and he assiduously is not trying to be like Mr. Palestine Solidarity. Everybody knows what he, and that's I think part of the maturity. It's like he has the keffiyeh. Everybody knows what that means. Everybody knows where he stands. I also loved how public he was about fasting during Ramadan. It made his play all the more amazing. I mean, the stories of it were really cool. I didn't know that, you know, an assistant on the team is the legendary God Sham God, also a Muslim. And God Sham God, first of all, let's be clear.
Sham God Wells?
Unequivocally. Yeah, I knew you were going to go with his birth name, but unequivocally, God Sham God is the greatest name in the history of sports. God Sham God. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. Maybe you're going to say, no, Rod Strickland is the greatest name in sports. I don't know.
No, I thought he made the decision to abandon what was an incredibly cool name.
Ah.
For one that's weird.
I got you. I like the hidden message of God Sham God, a message that I am totally projecting. I have no idea if it means anything. But they are waking up. They are going to sleep at night, waking up at 2 a.m. and having a massive meal, massive, that then has to last them until sundown the next day. So they're doing it on this schedule of 2 a.m. Get-togethers where they just eat. And I just love that the thought of Kyrie and the master of the Sham God, two dribbling legends, chowing down at 2 a.m. I don't know.
It's not just you. It's very heartening.
I like it. It says to me about where Kyrie is. Like, he's comfortable with his faith. He's comfortable with his politics. He's not talking about flat earther stuff. I do believe, and I know this from conversation that I had with Kyrie and another one with someone in his camp, that the whole video thing was a real eye-opener for him, that, oh, you just can't post stuff on social media unless you're prepared to defend it and defend it cogently. And neither of those things were on the table for Kyrie. But I also find it amazing that when Adam Silver came down on Kyrie for the posting of the video, the response of a lot of NBA players was actually to say, make public comments to the extent of, well, wait a minute. I thought we were in the player empowerment era. I thought this was a time where the league said they wanted us to speak out. And now here's Kyrie speaking out. And just because he's saying stuff that Adam Silver and the media and a lot of fans have a problem with, then all of a sudden it's shut up and dribble. And the hypocrisy of that to me, and showcasing it, was important because I've long thought of Adam Silver as a hypocrite. Like, as long as he says stuff that's squarely, as long as players, I should say stuff that's firmly in the lane of the NBA's politics and political agenda, then it's huzzah, huzzah, you know, let's all be political. But if you dared say something outside of that, then that's where the problems come in. Like, Adam Silver says he wants players to talk. If a player said something like, I don't think the NBA should have political partnerships and, you know, game partnerships and financial partnerships with Israel right now, the crackdown on that, I think, would be extreme. And I think Kyrie's escapade, as ill-fated and as ill-designed as it was, I thought actually exposed something about the league. If there's one last thing I want to say before I'll throw it to you, because we haven't mentioned it yet, Kyrie's rocking on the borderline of rocking another 50-40-90 season. Given his shot selection, that's amazing. Given the number of pull-up threes he takes that are not necessarily in the rhythm of a passing offense, shooting it from the corner, you know, like the fool's gold of Alec Burks, shooting 40% for Dallas. I mean, or a Dorian Finney-Smith. I mean, he's just an amazing shot taker. And so for him to be not just an amazing shot taker, but an amazing shot maker is why I'm always saying, where's Poochie?
Number one, the good feelings about saying there's a player empowerment era. We are in the era of player empowerment and player voice was never going to be bigger than the business of the NBA. If Kyrie Irving had posted and represented an ill-informed video that offended a different groups of people, there would not have been that backlash and the repercussions and the amends that he had to make. It's the reality of the world. If Kyrie Irving feels so strongly about what's happening to the Palestinian people and what's been happening to Gaza specifically for the last many months, then that is very meaningful. Number three, though, we've gone back in time a lot. We've gone back to the 80s, the 90s, the early part of the 2000s. And we've also talked about the state of the game today and the changes that have occurred in that time period. And in those discussions, we've talked about how the game has opened up, has widened. The court has widened. The possibilities of where a play can be begun and a play can be finished has expanded to the half court. And in acquiring Kyrie Irving, the Mavericks had two players who had to be guarded once they crossed half court. And even though that's the way the game has certainly trended, there's still only a handful of players that are legitimate threats, legitimate weapons once they cross half court. Stephen Curry, Damian Lillard, others for sure, but absolutely Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving.
Someone associated with Luka by the name of Trae Young?
Yep, certainly. And the misgivings when this trade occurred were because of potential personality or self-regard differences, but also, as you said, what would the on-court relationship be? What would the on-court chemistry look like? And we have praised Kyrie's game in our earlier comments. I have certainly gone on and on in previous episodes about how I feel about Doncic's game. And the reason there was instant fascination and kind of in a way Dallas acquiring Kyrie was kind of the ultimate high risk, high reward. And the reward was that in acquiring Irving, he was the second most talented offensive player in that backcourt. And there's hardly any other players that you could say that about. And before we get more into why it has worked the way that it has this season, an important part of the story, we've leveled a lot of the background of the public sentiment on Kyrie and who he had been on and off the court before he arrived in Dallas. The Mavericks season, the Mavericks are coming off a year where they make a surprise run to the Western Conference Finals. They knock off the NBA champion favorite Phoenix Suns. Winning in devastating fashion on the road in game 7 to get to the Western Conference Finals, what I consider in a way a premature appearance or an unexpectedly early appearance for Luka in Dallas with the team that he had, as you have talked about, Jalen Brunson being his backcourt mate at the time, and even Dallas underestimating what they had potentially in that combination that shouldn't have been us underestimated since they had made a surprise appearance to the West Finals. But it not only it establishes Doncic as an incredible offensive player putting up nutso numbers. This guy can win. It seems as though on the back of this guy, this team can win. And there are huge expectations for them going into the following season, including myself. I think that I thought that they were going to wind up with the best record in the West that year. Wasn't predicting a championship, but I thought they were going to have a great season. They were going to continue that upward trajectory.
Just real quick to clarify, sure, though, you must have, otherwise you would have been, smoking something, but you must have had the expectation that they were going to re-sign Brunson, right?
I'm not even going to give myself that much credit. I think that it was right, but I think they had already lost Brunson.
Oh, and you were still like...
I think I was. It was not... clearly, it didn't turn out that way, and there wasn't much wisdom behind it, even at the time. I guess I was just kind of so knocked out by Doncic and what he and the taste that last taste that postseason run had. And I've always had kind of high regard for Dinwiddie, so I thought that he could be an able replacement for Brunson. None of it panned out that way. Dallas is kind of disappointing from the start. So Kyrie joins a disappointing Dallas outfit, but one that I think is still firmly in the bottom half of the Western Conference playoff bracket. And Kyrie's in and out of the lineup, so blame certainly can't be placed on him or his on-court influence on the team. His partnership with Luka never really gets a chance.
To get
on track and or get any traction. And the final indignity is with the team, I think, firmly in ninth or tenth, a huge disappointment, but still in that play-in picture. Mark Cuban pretty much orders any player who can offer a chance of winning a game, orders them benched to ensure that Dallas does not get the 10th, finish 10th and have a chance to win play-in games and make any kind of noise. And Jason Kidd dutifully follows that directive. That was the most nauseating thing that I had felt that I had seen in a long time. Things like covert or even overt tanking had been talked about for a long time, but that was mostly by lottery squads. To have a team so strenuously underachieve when you know that prices, ticket prices and concession prices at American Airlines Arena were sky high. And to not only have an underachieving squad, but for the owner, like possibly the most public owner in the NBA, the one most closely associated with his franchise for multiple decades, to say, no, we don't even want, this disappointing season we've had, they've wasted a lot of money. We're not even going to get a chance to play inspired ball at the perfect time. We're not even going to give you a chance to see any kind of play in noise and possibly upset teams who have had better seasons than us. And if there's one team positioned to be able to win knockout games on the backs of a singular talent, Dallas had it.
Mm-hmm.
And so to literally say, fuck you, everybody. We are like, we've decided our season is over. There were really dark clouds hanging over Dallas in the offseason and at the beginning of this year. And I think that contributed to why the pairing of Doncic and Irving really wasn't getting a lot of press.
Expectation, and, yeah.
You know, I mean, it was almost, it hasn't worked. All right, Kyrie's still there, but yeah, it didn't really work. And as you had said, I think the reason, even as much as Irving's public profile and the reputation, the bizarre reputation that Kyrie had earned as a person, it's the fact that he had missed so much time. He's an injury-prone player. So aches and pains. He'll miss assorted games through those every year, no matter what the situation. Plus, he was, for a part of his last season with the Nets, he couldn't play home games. Because he wouldn't get vaccinated and couldn't even travel to Canada to play the Raptors. So we hadn't seen that much of Kyrie. And of course, you know, everything's what have you done for me lately. So Kyrie's genius wasn't fresh in people's minds. So I think that there was a sense of sleeping on what Dallas potentially had. And because Kyrie's familiar injury history propped up early and throughout the first half of the season, and Dallas was not playing great ball and was closer to 500 throughout the season than they really should have been, it seemed as though the prognostications, the negative ones, it seemed as though those were coming true.
Mm.
And then post All-Star break, Irving's healthy, those guys are on the court, and the best of what could have been envisioned between the two of them starts materializing every single night. Before I ask you kind of to talk about what you're seeing in more detail on the court, I think that you had mentioned Kyrie kind of building a reputation for not being so ball dominant, so singularly ball dominant that he couldn't play with any other incredibly talented players. And as you had said, his history said just the opposite.
Right.
So that was an absolute misnomer. And pretty much the reason for why we're having this discussion. This is, and I know that I've thrown out a lot of hyperbole when talking about certain players in the past few shows. But I feel as though this is the most talented backcourt that I can remember seeing, in a very long time. And if I have ever seen a more talented backcourt, I can't remember what it was, which means that I don't think that I've ever seen one.
Yeah, I mean, what the people will respond with is Curry and Klay. And I don't think Curry and Klay come close, because Luka is like Draymond mixed with a point guard with range. Like all the stuff that Draymond does to unlock Curry and Klay, or I should say did when they were all peaking, and all the rebounding and whatnot. I mean, on offense, to be clear, I'm saying, obviously Luka isn't close to the defender Draymond is. Although Luka's defense this year, he's no longer a revolving door. He averages a steal and a half a game. He has terrific hands. That's an unsung story, too, is that Luka this year has played decent defense. The question, so yeah, best backcourt, are they the best backcourt I've ever seen? Yeah, yes. Could Harden and Kyrie have been the best backcourt we ever saw? Could have been. They fucked it up. Some of it was injuries. Some of it was personalities. Harden did not like Kyrie. There's a famous story of Kyrie burning some sage in the Brooklyn Nets locker room and Harden being like, to quote a certain movie, looked at him and just was like, who the hell is this asshole burning sage? I mean, just different people. They couldn't jibe. Meanwhile, I feel like Luka cares about his newborn child, clearly. I mean, I'm following Luka way too closely. And he cares about ball. And Luka's love of ball is so overwhelming that when Kyrie does cool stuff, I also like looking at Luka's face, because there's a joy factor of like, I can't believe I get to play with this guy. The look on Luka's face when Kyrie hit that 17-foot left-handed hook shot over Nikola Jokic by just a little fingertip. Such a close fingertip that some people were even saying wrongly that Jokic may have even tipped the ball. Not true. I've looked at it like I've looked at the Zapruder tapes, the Kennedy assassination tapes. I've watched that hook shot. It's something special, and it's all them. And I think the question we need to ask as we hit the home stretch of the show is, what are our playoff expectations for this duo? Because what I am thinking, what a lot of people are saying is not, I think that this is going to sound wacky and wild, but I'm going by their record since the All-Star break. I think their ceiling is the NBA Finals, where they would lose almost certainly to Boston. I think the Eastern playoffs, as said by writer Alan Hahn, so I'm stealing this line, the Eastern Conference playoffs is basically the Boston Celtic Invitational. Like, it's just, who has a chance to bring the Celtics even like a bead of sweat? And then everyone's assuming they're going to play Denver against, you know, obviously Jokic, the MVP, and I mean, who's going to win this year? And a gimpy, pardon the line, I don't know if I'm supposed to say the word gimpy, an injured Jamal Murray. And I think Dallas, I mean, they could also lose in the first round to the Clippers, you know, and that wouldn't surprise me if they lost, although I would, actually that would surprise me. But the Clippers, certainly, if they get their stuff together and if Kawhi plays, they can beat anybody, as they did against the Mavericks a few seasons ago. But this is a much different Mavericks team. I think they can make the NBA Finals. I'm putting my chips on the table on that. And I think that they have created a team that's ideal, not just for Luka, not just for Kyrie, but for Daniel Gafford, for James Lively. I mean, for, oh my gosh, Adante Exum, for goodness sakes, is, you know, hit a game-tying three at the buzzer against the Rockets over this past weekend on the road to beating the Rockets in overtime in a game that the Rockets led by 20-plus points. It's a team that can do the requisite damage to get out of the Western Conference. Boom. Said it. There it is. That's my expectation. That's my ceiling for this team. If this front court was as good as the back court and this was 1986, everybody would be saying they have a legit shot at the NBA Finals. But because it's a back court, we don't look at it with the same kind of potential dominance. And yet, if you look at the way the game is played, you know, it's all backcourts. It's all Barabans these days. It's all backcourt. And so I think, yes, NBA Finals, ceiling, that's my money. That's where it's going. That's what I feel good about saying. Bam.
With a couple of weeks until the playoffs start, I would love to have a conversation with you, do a show with you, a postseason preview to kind of talk about where we ultimately think who's going to be playing for it. At the end, for now, I'll try to limit my feelings about the Mavericks, except that I will say that I'm not assuming that it's going to be Boston and Denver, or Boston or Denver in the finals. I'm certainly not assuming that about either team.
We will discuss in future episodes. I find your Eastern Conference thoughts intriguing, but we'll save that for the next one. Go on, please, regarding the Mavs.
I would absolutely agree with you that their ceiling is the finals. And that's what I love about this year. I know that, you know, Boston has certainly been the front runners from the start, but I think both conferences are, I think it's going to be incredibly unpredictable. And the parity in both conferences filling out the majority of the playoff lines, I think has made for incredibly competitive season of basketball, as we talked about recently. The West particularly, because they haven't even had a Boston whose regular season has been above and beyond everybody else. The West is wide, wide open. So I think it's going to come down to the last day of the season when the actual matchups are determined. A team who draws a certain team might lose to that team in the first round, whereas if they had drawn another team, might go to the West Finals or the Finals. There's a few different teams that I think that fit that description, which again makes this potentially so much fun and so hard to call. But I started by saying the Mavs are playing as well or better than anybody in the West. And if you're playing better than anybody in the West, then you have as good a chance as anybody to go through to the finals. Who I think is going to be the leading scorer in the NBA, and is certainly going to finish in the top three of MVP voting. The fact that he's not the Mavericks guard who leads the league in clutch scoring. I mean, that's the team you want to have then.
Yeah.
That's the team you want to have.
Because Luka's also famously good in the clutch. So it's double power for a fourth quarter.
Something else that you would reference, I think that they're visibly delighted playing with each other. And that really carries through. You know, when you know that you have talent, certain talents that nobody else has ever had before, you can do certain things that nobody else can. Nobody's been able to, and nobody really can now. And both of those guys fit that description in different skills. When you're on the court with somebody, and especially when you play with somebody who does things that knock you out, and you're the person who knocks everybody else out with what you can do, there's a level of mutual delight with that, and clearly it's come together at the right time. You had talked about kind of the perfect complement in a way, or what they hope is the perfect complement with the rest of their roster. when things are going really well, other players step up. Mm-hmm. It is the ability and the environment of other players, the less famous players, being able to step up and flourish that ultimately builds championship teams. We've talked about this in a few different episodes. That's why role players and supporting players are remembered 30 years later and other all-stars aren't. Mm-hmm. Because of roles you played on championship teams. Dallas seems to have, they seem to have that kind of energy. So, yes, their ceiling is, I'm going to say their ceiling is winning the championship.
Whoa.
I don't think it's going to happen, but their ceiling is winning the championship. I certainly don't think, oh, if they get there, they're definitely going to lose. Absolutely not. You potentially have, if they play the Celtics, I think Dallas has the two best players.
And I agree.
So that's a great starting point. That is a great starting point in any series.
It is.
So,
the Celtics
and again,
seven, though.
And they can also lose in the first round.
Amazing.
They can also lose in the first round. Again, I love the opportunity to really talk in more detail about both conferences, especially once the playoff brackets are set or are mostly set. But again, it is I'm really glad that it's because of their incredible play and what some consider the unlikely success that these two players are leading, which is why we're talking about this right now. And just to cap the episode, Irving's history of bad exits remains to be seen with Dallas. I'm really, really glad things are going very well right now, and I want them to continue going well. But how Kyrie Irving ends his career with Dallas, whether he ends his career with Dallas down the line as a beloved historic Maverick, or becomes yet another stop, which had some highs and ended sadly, that obviously remains to be seen. But but I'm very glad that this is the story that they have been able to tell and been able to tell together. And it's interesting that considering how furious I was at that franchise at the end of the year, was just like, oh, fuck you guys, all of you. The fact that I feel like I'm rooting for the Mavericks against most other contenders, is quite the about face.
Indeed. And that's a good note to end on. And also it's a bit of a teaser because Ari and I will do a playoff preview down the line. So everybody can look forward to that. This Dallas team, think of Luka as Dirk Nowitzki and Kyrie as about 15 Jason Terrys. And you have a recipe for some deja vu. Thank you so much to The Nation Magazine for underwriting our ability to do this. Thank you to my producer, David Pigaboo, for getting these things in a timely manner. Thank you, Arya Shirazi. For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.